That's good stuff.
She's not like anyone else. You wonder why she captured you like a firefly.
Hey everybody, welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian Wimpen and William Tincup coming to you live every day, chatting with the wonderful people in the HR world, supporting HR, anything that has HR in it, any words we can find. So I'm looking at some snow in Tulsa, which is kind of nice, a little change, then it's turning into a river, then it's going to turn into ice. So we'll have a little hockey going on later on. So William, how are you today, this wonderful, I hope it's Wednesday, day?
You know, I like my bacon extra crispy. And this morning, I am extra snarky. And it all started with an Amazon review that I read that is 64 pages long, but it is probably the best humor I've ever kind of consumed on the internet. And it was just great. I mean, it was fantastic. But it's set in motion. The unintended consequences of reading an Amazon review that's 64 pages long and is some of the best humor you've ever written is it puts you into a place where everything becomes sarcastic and witty and funny and overtly snarky. So I'm doing great. I don't know how people are going to contend with me this afternoon, but I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for asking.
Hey, that's, you know, that's... I woke up this morning thinking about that. I'm like, God, I wonder if William's going to be, like, in a mood this afternoon. That'll be fun. That and we need some glitter, and the day will be made. So, let's get to our guests. Because I, in pre-show, he opened it up. He said, nothing is off limits. And that's, like, the best phrase ever uttered in pregame with Drive-Thru HR. So, Mike Jacobson, welcome to Drive Through HR.
I regretted those words just as they passed my lips.
Couldn't take it back. It was already out.
I'm great. How are you doing?
Oh my gosh, it is. I think it's going to be one of those days. It's going to be a good day, whether other people agree with that or not. It's going to happen. So, if you would, let's introduce yourself, and we'll jump right into it.
Sure. My name is Mike Jacobson. I am an attorney. I'm currently working for a company called Expert HR. Expert HR is a product being developed by a company named Reed Business Information, which is under the umbrella of Reed Elsevier, major company. And Expert HR is an award-winning content information and compliance service for HR professionals. We've won the Web Marketing Association's Web Award, the Magnum Opus Gold Award for Outstanding Achievement in Content Marketing, the Apex Award for Publishing Excellence, and that was all in 2012. You know, last year was a really big year for us. We're thinking 2013 is going to be even bigger. Our content is written by some of the major law firms and employment lawyers in the country, ranging from mega firms like Little or Mendelsohn and Jackson Lewis to the most prolific sole practitioners there are. Tremendous experience for us to work with those people in developing our content. We got some great information and some great products out of it. And our content runs the gamut from federal to state, local authority, includes case law, statutes, administrative codes, NLRB decisions, really everything under the sun. And we have a lot of diverse content tools for employers, like how-tos and employment law manual articles. The employment law manual is like our version of Wikipedia, but about employment law. FAQs, checklists, sample policies, sample documents, and many, many more things. It's been a tremendous privilege to work for Expert HR so far, and I'm looking forward to great things. Before Expert HR, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask you, what's top of mind for you these days? What's occupying most of your intellect?
Well, I specialize in termination of employment at Expert HR. So, you know, the thing that I'm always thinking about and brainstorming on how to improve is the process by which an employer will actually fire somebody. And, you know, something that I'm working on for 2013 that's not really very common yet, but I'm hoping will become more common, is what's called the periodic acknowledgement. Now, people out there in HR world are going to be very familiar with what are called at-will acknowledgements. You sign one when you start with a company. There's probably one in your employee handbook as well. And it simply asks you, the employee, to acknowledge that you have an at-will relationship with the employer. But what I'm thinking about is, why not expand on what we have employees acknowledge? Rather than just have them acknowledge that they're at will, why not also ask them to acknowledge that they've read and understood the employee handbook, that they've not been made any promises about tenure or about compensation, they've not been harassed or discriminated against in any way. You know, if you can get that information from your employees on a periodic basis, let's call it once per year, then you can really benefit from that information. You store it in the right way, and you use it, you put it in their personnel record, you use it in case you've got a dispute, a claim. And they also can function like mini exit interviews once a year. You're making sure nobody's being treated improperly in the workplace. You're making sure there's no unlawful or immoral activity going on. You're making sure nobody's being sexually harassed or discriminated against because of their race or their disability. And if you have that evidence going back, let's say, 5 years, for example, it becomes much more difficult for an employee to then argue after the fact, oh, I really was discriminated against all those years, I just didn't tell you about it.
Nice. Well, I've used this periodic acknowledgement, but we called it more of a re-up, where we did it based, what's funny is you're taking it and using all the legal side of it. We did it from a values perspective and alignment, like here's where we're going this year, you know, here's what's important, here's the key initiatives, are you in, like do you want to do this, you know, again. And so we did it as a kind of a re-up, but I really like the actual tagging that along with the legal side. That's genius, actually.
You can use it for both purposes. You know, you can use it for the values side to make sure you and your employees are on the same page in terms of values, and you can also use it proactively to try and reduce your exposure to litigation. There's no reason you can't use it for both.
Yeah. That's the process of terminating, Mike, what do we get right and what do we get wrong when we like, if you were to look at, like, here's the five errors that we all kind of make in terminating an employee, and if you just kind of resolve these, you've got 95% of your terminations kind of go in a healthy way.
Well, I would say the thing that employers most often get right about terminating is choosing the right person to terminate. Very rarely will you see an employer terminate somebody for strictly a personal reason or because they're trying to discriminate or because they're trying to harass. I mean, that is, you know, 1% of all cases involve a real straightforward claim like that. On the other hand, what employers usually get wrong is, or what HR professionals specifically usually get wrong, is that they try to play the nice guy or the nice woman in the process of terminating somebody, to the point where what they say to the employee face-to-face doesn't quite match up with what's documented in the records. And so, in other words, if you call somebody into your office and say, you know, if it were up to me, I'd keep you around, but, you know, the guys upstairs, they decided that we got to let you go. Now you're planting this seed of doubt in the employee's mind about, you know, who really wants to see them fired and for what reason. And that doesn't have to happen. It's human nature to try and avoid confrontation and say you're fired because you haven't made enough sales this month. But by avoiding that specific information, you're actually creating more of a liability for the company down the road.
When you hear the phrase hire slow and fire fast, what does it conjure up for you?
Well, it's great advice because you got to make sure on the front end that you're bringing the right person into the company. It's much, much more difficult to then get rid of somebody after the fact than it would be to never hire them in the first place, obviously. So the process of recruiting and hiring is a very detailed process for a reason. You know, background checks are permissible for a reason. Credit checks are permissible in some jurisdictions for a reason. So the amount of effort that employers put in on the front end, bringing the right people into the company, is always going to be rewarded. And in terms of letting somebody go quickly, you don't want to let somebody bad linger around your company because now they can start doing other things. They can start preparing for their termination. They can start trying to recruit other people to come with them. They can start collecting your proprietary information to bring with them, your client list, your secret formulas, whatever. They can start a mutiny, for lack of a better term, because they know that they're about to be canned and they want everyone to be on their side. They can spread the desire to sue the employer, and because if one person has a successful lawsuit, then maybe a dozen other people think, hey, why can't I also be successful? So when you identify an employee as a problematic person, you know, I wouldn't necessarily advise that you act hastily in getting them out of your organization, but you do have to act in haste in terms of addressing the problem, coming up with a solution, not just letting it linger.
As a clarification, the periodic acknowledgement, how often would be too often in your mind?
I think anything more often than once a year would be too often because, you know, once a year employees are going to go through this performance evaluation process. A lot of employers also have employees fill out surveys once a year where they give feedback back to the company about, you know, if they feel like they're being treated well, if they get along with their manager, so to speak. So why not have them do it as part of that process? You know, they're already going through this evaluation. Why not have them do it then? If you had them do it more often than that, then it kind of makes people wonder, you know, why do I have to keep signing this over and over again? You know, you kind of wonder, is there an ulterior motive here?
Did you happen to catch the George Clooney movie Up in the Air?
Up in the Air, yes, I did, actually. Yeah.
Did that resonate with you on some level?
Fortunately, I've never had to travel as often as his character does in that movie. But, you know, I used to be a practicing attorney, and I was a little bit disillusioned with my job towards the end there because I didn't feel like I had the ability to use my creativity as much and get out there and use my people skills. It's a very focused, you know, document-driven, appearance-driven profession. So, you know, I determined after a certain period of time that it wasn't for me. So I could relate to his character and that he was a little disillusioned with his job.
What was your worst terminating kind of experience, either giving or receiving? what's your worst experience there?
I represented this medical facility one time, and the facility was terminating a nurse for insubordination, patient complaints, discipline issues, things like that. In the process of investigating the case, doing discovery, I had the opportunity to interview the nurse, and I could tell you that she was a very confrontational, very nasty person. And it occurred to me that the way she was terminated by the company ended up being a reflection of her personality more so than it was the company's personality. You know, they figured we got to fight fire with fire with this person. If she's being mean to us, we're going to be mean to her. And, you know, the resulting lawsuit was very costly, very contentious, as you can imagine. You know, the nurse, she made claims of racial discrimination and sexual discrimination, sexual harassment. She went through a number of different attorneys, all of whom had problems with her. She ultimately decided to represent herself, which, believe it or not, actually make things more difficult because you have to deal with somebody who doesn't really know the procedure of the law. She ended up attaching allegations that there was mold growing in the facility's ceiling, which turned out to be true. And then she attached a personal injury claim to her case, claiming that because she was breathing in the mold all these years, now she can't work ever again. I mean, it was just a huge, huge mess. And looking back on it, you know, I can kind of identify here and there where the employer could have went in a different direction and prevented some of these things from happening. You know, the documentary record wasn't as detailed as I like to see. You know, there were performance evaluations that were missing. They didn't have as much specific information in there as you usually like to see. Some of the anecdotes that I heard when interviewing people weren't in the record. Now, when you have two pieces of evidence that establish one fact, documentary evidence and testimonial evidence, it's a much stronger argument than if you've only got one or the other. So had the employer kept their records about this person's performance history, I feel as though she either would have been less likely to sue or the case would have been much smoother.
All righty. Now I want to move to gender and generations and their expectations as it relates to termination. So let's do generations first. Do you think that different generations, you know, at the age of the person being terminated, if you will, do you think that there's different expectations as it relates to terminations?
It's a good question. I think that when someone gets to be toward the end of their career, particularly we got, you know, the baby boomer generation, people are getting older in the workforce, they're hoping to hold on to their jobs longer. I think that a lot of people come to grips with the fact that, you know, they're going to be coaxed into retirement. But at the same time, on the flip side of that, they also might be more sensitive to otherwise innocuous things and view it as age discrimination. You know, there's a lot of law in this area, the Age Discrimination in Employment Act, the Older Workers Benefits Protection Act. So there's a lot of guidance for employers to follow to prevent disputes with employees who get terminated and then later claim age discrimination. But you've got to be sensitive about it as an employer as well. You've got to be cognizant of the way your actions might be viewed by somebody who believes they're being discriminated against based on age, and you've got to always focus on your business-related reasons for termination. You can't terminate somebody because they're old and then replace them with somebody who's young, but you can terminate somebody who's been ineffective or not doing his or her job and then replace them with somebody who does a better job.
In terms of gender, in your experience, is there a different treatment? I know we shouldn't, I get that, but have you seen different treatment in the way that we terminate men versus the way that we terminate women?
You know, I really haven't. I would say that more of the cases that I had in my career that I can think of involved terminating women, but I can't really put my finger on why. So I can't really identify a pattern and say, you know, women are usually terminated in this way, men are usually terminated in another way. It was just my anecdotal experience that more of the cases I had involved women.
All right. Well, let me ask about bring your own device, something that's obviously kind of a way that companies kind of get us to use our own technology, bring our own iPad and laptops and iPhones to work, and maybe they pay us, you know, and help us with the offsetting some of the costs. But you've got a kind of an interesting intersection point where now that technology is technically your technology, but you're using it for the purposes of a company. How do you think that this world is going to get resolved as it relates to terminations in particular, where someone has been working with their laptop? You know, you might not have monitoring software on their laptop. they might be working on files that are either in the cloud or on their laptop. Like, how do you see this? First of all, how have you seen it shape up over the last couple of years with bring your own device, and where do you think that that's headed?
Well, there's a tug of war going on in this field because, on the one hand, employers want people to be able to bring their own devices because it'll increase their productivity. If you can tell an employer, you know, you can work from home, you can work on your laptop, you can work on your iPad, you can check your email from your iPhone, what have you, they can work longer hours. They can do more work. They can do it more efficiently. So employers certainly want that. On the other hand, is the data security issue. I wrote a blog on this topic recently for our Expert HR Employment Intelligence blog called The Strange Case of HR and the Electronically Stored Information. It was a Sherlock Holmes-themed blog, but it's about this issue in the sense that, you know, once you've got employees using different devices, then you got to worry about data protection on each one of them. Sensitive information in an email, sensitive information in a document generated on someone's laptop. All of that can be considered company property, proprietary information in some way. And certainly employers can put policies in place whereby in exchange for allowing employees to use their own devices to work, which employees usually would like to do as well because it makes things more convenient for them, the employee is going to acknowledge that there's some exchange of information that they wouldn't have had if they had their device completely private.
Perfect. Well, everybody, let me do a quick reset. This is Brian and William. We're on with Mike Jacobson talking about a whole bunch of the legal stuff, especially around terminations. So, Mike, where do you see kind of the next future gigantic kind of risk area or kind of quagmire as it relates to kind of how the whole termination cycle works? And I'll give you a little more context. Over time, we know that as things are as things evolve, you have it could be gender issues, it could be ethnicity issues, it could be getting terminated because you're doing union organization, maybe it's social media. There's lots of different areas that it's evolved where you have higher rates of termination. Where do you see kind of the future, like in the next year or two, that we're going to see upticks in that, like risk areas or groupings of terminations, things like that that you can share with people to think about?
I think one of the major risk areas to look at in the next year or two is going to be terminations motivated by mental health. And the reason I say that is because of the gun control issue. It seems like, you know, the, our elected leaders are going to reach a compromise at some point. I know, you know, it's a pretty optimistic view in this political climate, but I do believe there's going to be a compromise, and I think the compromise that they're going to settle on is universal background checks. And part of a universal background check for a gun license is delving into somebody's mental health. And usually this type of information would have been completely protected by HIPAA. But if we then open that information up for background checks for gun licenses, you have to wonder to what extent that information, now that it's out there in the world, is going to bleed over into the HR world. Rather than ask somebody on an employment application directly, do you have schizophrenia, you can get around that by saying, have you ever applied for and been rejected for a firearm? Now, of course, the gun rights advocates are going to fight back against that because, you know, it would be a little bit of an invasion of privacy. But under the current law, it might not necessarily be illegal to ask that question. So then the question becomes, are employers using this information in a discriminatory way? Are the people who aren't getting firearms licenses for whatever reason, are they also not getting jobs? So that's going to be something that I think is going to come to the forefront of termination law, assuming that the compromise on the universal background checks is made at some point.
Nice. Let's do the highlights of the NLRB decisions of 2012. What did you when you look back at 2012? What do you think that HR needs to pay attention to?
Well, this is also a political issue, so that's a great segue there, Brian. The issue is, in 2012, the Senate appointed two individuals to the NLRB, and it did so during one of its recesses. Now, those individuals, one of whom is Sharon Block, who is the labor counsel for Ted Kennedy, and the other is an individual named Richard Griffin, who is former general counsel for the International Union of Operating Engineers. Under these two individuals, the NLRB issued some pretty stunning opinions in 2012. You know, one was on the usage of at-will acknowledgments and employee handbooks, which we talked about earlier today. The decision essentially was that those acknowledgments could violate the NLRA if they unfairly require people to acknowledge that they're at will. Another decision was on the confidentiality of an ongoing internal investigation. The NLRB found that employers are not permitted to declare a moratorium on the discussion of a pending internal investigation, which would make it difficult to conduct the investigation. And another was on the limitation on an employer's right to restrict certain communications regarding the employer on social media platforms. The NLRB ruled that if an employer places a limitation on what you can talk about on Twitter, for example, that would limit otherwise quote-unquote concerted activity, that it would be impermissible under the NLRA. So what's interesting about this is now, you know, President Obama had to resubmit these individuals for appointment to the NLRB, which he did, and there's also going to be pushback on that. The Republicans aren't going to be so quick to confirm these individuals, but the compromise might end up being that the Republicans will get to appoint two individuals to the NLRB as well, which would result in a total of four individuals being appointed to the board, two of whom are on the liberal side and two of whom are on the conservative side. The result would potentially be that some of these decisions are rolled back, if not completely invalidated. So it's very much up in the air what is going to become of those controversial decisions in 2012. And the crazy thing is that it applies to both unionized and non-unionized workforces.
Nice. Who owns my connections, friends, and followers?
Say that again. I'm sorry.
I said, who owns my connections, followers, and friends?
Who owns it? Probably, yeah. Google.
You know, well, technically, I guess you're right, right?
Well, it's either got to be Google or Facebook.
Yeah. Well, too funny. Where are you? We've got about 4 minutes left in the show. Where are you going this year? Are you going to get out and about and go to some conferences?
I'm hoping to. I don't have anything scheduled at the moment, but yeah, I'm definitely hoping to make some appearances this year at the conferences. I actually did a webinar on HR.com last week. The topic was how to fire employees without being burned. Pretty well received. I don't know if you guys have ever done one of these, but they give you this interface where you can do your slideshow, but you can also see what percentage of your audience is actually looking at the slide versus what percentage is looking at some other screen on their computer. So it gives you like real-time feedback as to whether or not what you're talking about in the moment is really interesting. So if you start seeing that attention meter start to dip down, you know, to flip to the next slide. So that was very cool. They had this virtual conference going on during the time I had this webinar, with virtual booths and avatars of HR professionals walking around, popping their heads into these virtual booths, and it's pretty cool stuff.
Well, that is, the attention meter is at sometimes a little bit disconcerting, because it's like I just start getting pissed. I'm like, what are you doing?
If you tell a joke and the meter starts to tick down, it's that you know that it was not well received.
Yeah, no, I've never had that happen. So it's foreign content right there. So. We got a couple minutes left here. So Mike, this is a pivotal question right here. So where do you personally draw inspiration from? Sitcom, book, radio, internet radio, HR internet radio shows? Where do you draw that from?
That's an interesting question. I can say that I was not prepared for that question.
my work's
I would
done.
Say that I
good talk.
Yeah, and I said in the beginning that nothing is off limits, so certainly that falls into that category. You know, I would say that I probably draw my inspiration from music and literature. I'm an avid reader. You know, I have a big library at home of books that I read, fiction and nonfiction. Big science fiction fan, horror fiction fan. So I draw a lot of my inspiration from my literary heroes like Stephen King. And I also draw a lot of inspiration from the music that I like to listen to. You know, I like to listen to jam bands, for example. And, you know, I find it the improvisation and the creativity that goes into that to be really, really inspirational, for lack of a better term.
Cool. Well, that's probably one of the best answers that I think I've ever heard to that question. So you get.
Well, you were hoping I was going to say some. You were hoping I was going to say some employment attorney that I used to work for, or some HR professional.
No, I was hoping for like I was going the gypsies route, like something really really way out there, gypsies and some meditation possibly. I don't know, but so okay. Where can folks connect with you to meet up with you, to connect online, whatever? Just tell us where everybody can meet up, and we're just about out of time.
I'm on Twitter. The handle is HR Terminator. That's HR and Terminator, no spaces or anything like that. I'm not on Facebook, unfortunately. It's one of those things. I've never had a Facebook account. I'm actually quite proud of it. My grandmother's on Facebook though, and she's always like, "Why aren't you on Facebook? How am I supposed to look at your pictures?" It's been very difficult to stay the course all these years. So Twitter is really the place if you want to connect with me. Also, experthr.com, you'll see a lot of different content that I've written. The Expert HR Employment Intelligence blog, I blog there fairly often. So you can catch up with me in any one of those places.
Well, very cool. Thanks for coming on the show. I want to give a quick shout out to Michael Carty, friends over in the UK, and we are pretty much wrapped up, folks. Thanks for listening. We will talk to you tomorrow.
the face of the earth and gone. Shot into